dungeon cells and remained there many days. King Zedekiah sent for him and received him. The king questioned him secretly in his house and said, "Is there any word from the Lord?" And Jeremiah said, "There is." And the king questioned him secretly in his house and said, "Is there any word from the Lord?" And Jeremiah said, "There is." May God again this day bless the reading and hearing of his word. May he bless it to our minds for better understanding and to our lives for committed living. I really want to express my deepest appreciation to Pastor Mike Potts for inviting me to come to be a part of the Rehoboth family in terms of this worship service. And also, it's good to see Pastor Mary Noble Parish as a part of our worship experience this morning. It's been my joy to know your pastor. As a matter of fact, when we first met, I think I came to a meeting at Bethpage, and it was involving United Methodist men. And the very first thing, and I think some of you know this person I'm going to mention, Johnny Hayes came up to me, the late Johnny Hayes came to me and said, "Don't bother our preacher. Let him stay. Leave him alone." Well, we were able to do that because of the fact of the job that he was doing there with the people and what he had done in terms of the congregation and moving it from where it was. If you know anything all about Bethpage, you know where the original building was, and they moved out on the highway, which made a significant, you know, difference. And then he came, you know, here, and I don't have to worry about that question now. Simply because I don't have that, you know, responsibility. But I appreciated his leadership, and I want to say I appreciated so much the fact that he's a part of the Board of Ordained Ministry. And I appreciate that because we need to hear from those such as he is in terms of what God is saying. And we need that kind of balance. And so I'm grateful for the fact that he's on the Board of Ordained Ministry, and also for the fact that he's continuing to try and learn and to understand. But I'm also grateful for his family. They've supported him. Kim, Tyler, Hannah, and Noah, they've been with him in terms of his moving and each church he's served. And that means a great deal. And I'm very glad that Priscilla has been traveling with me as I've gone from church to church. Wherever I've been, she has been there with me. And I want to say thank you to the first-time acolyte, Hughes, who came and lit the candles. We did a wonderful job, and we're glad that you're part of that. And also Brother Cage, who was our liturgist, and making us aware of all the things happening, you know, in terms of the church and the Giles, who's over here on the organ. And indeed, the person who's working the sound system, and I need to get along with him because you know what he can do. And also Brother McHenry, who led us in relationship to, you know, to music. So it is indeed a real joy to come back, and it's been a while since I have been here, but it is good to be here and certainly to be with you. I know that all of you have an interest in what's going on at 529, and I'm really glad I'm not close to that. In terms of the worship experiences, because it would be a real challenge. But indeed, I want to say that I was proud of our high school team, and I've tried to be there for each game, and even for the playoff, you know, time. And I appreciate, you know, that, and it's good to see the coach and his wife in church, you know, this morning. That's good for that. And so, again, we look forward to the season they'll have. And I know he's looking forward to it and working hard at trying to get the football players, you know, ready. Well, I believe it was Charles Dickens who was one who said that it's the best of times and it's also the worst of times. And I think when he said that, it was in relationship to what we know as the French Revolution. And I want to say to us today that indeed we live in what may be called the best of times as well as the worst of times. It's the best of times we begin to look at our technology and all that we're able to do. And I doubt seriously if there's anybody here who doesn't have a cell phone. And if you don't have one, it's because you haven't been offered one. It's simply because of the fact you've declined to have one, but I would imagine that everybody here has a cell phone. And indeed, it's amazing what you can do with the iPad. And the interesting thing about the cell phone, what I discovered the other day, is they're working on it in terms of being able to resist water. So the next one that you hear about will be one that if you drop it in the water, you don't have to worry about it, it'll still ring. But you know, indeed, the iPad is another thing that just amazes me in terms of its use and how, the many things you can, you know, do with it. And we're getting so now where we're having almost a paperless society, but still you have to have it as a backup system because sometimes these things do fail. I think the thing that reminds me is sometimes if you go into a grocery store, the interesting thing is that if you don't have a computer, if it goes down, everything shuts down. And it's amazing how I think even the kids in school carry computers. And I'm dated because all I had was the old notebook with the times table. Everybody remember the times table? On the back of it, and that's how I learned about, you know, math and addition and all those kind of things. Well, indeed, it is a tremendous time from the standpoint of what they can do with lasers. And, you know, we got excited about that when we saw Star Wars and Darth Vader and all of that. But it's amazing how it is they can take lasers and help us in terms of physically what they can do in terms of taking the laser and working with cataracts in order to be able to insert the lens. And the laser allows them to cut more accurately. But in another sense, it's also kind of the worst of times. All of the technology we have is wonderful until it fails. And then indeed, you have quite a headache. And I know all of us have had that experience when you call somebody, you don't talk to a human voice. Maybe I'm the only one. But you go from one number to another number to another number. Indeed, it's the worst of times we begin to look in relationship to the economy, though indeed it's improving, and I think our prayers are hope that it shall continue to improve. It's been the worst of times when we begin to look at our world and all the things that are taking place and all the things that are going on. And how wonderful it would be if all the things that are going on were indeed very positive. And so as it goes, that was some of the experience that was happening in terms of Israel. It had really been the best of times, but indeed it was the worst of times. And so when you look at Jeremiah, Jeremiah's an interesting person. Many times he's called the weeping prophet. And he's called a weeping prophet because of lamentations, and there seems to be a sadness about what he has to say. But yet and still, when you listen to Jeremiah, what he has to say is extremely important. Jeremiah was a part of the priestly lineage, but indeed he was a prophet. Now, the interesting thing about Jeremiah was the fact that he was called to be a prophet at an early age. And indeed, when God said he wanted to be a prophet, when I speak of a prophet, I'm not talking about somebody like Ron Howes who's going to tell you about the weather tomorrow. But I'm talking about somebody who says, thus saith the Lord. This is what God has declared, and this is what I must deliver to you. And indeed, when God said he had called him, he called him at an early age. And Jeremiah said, I'm too young. I'm too young to be a prophet. I'm only just a child. He didn't mean that he was your age. You've got a birthday coming up, you know, and you'll be 8 years old. He didn't mean that, Ryan, in particular. But what he was saying is, I'm young in terms of this experience. I'm too young. Because the interesting thing about Israel was most times priests and the like were 30 years old before they began to work for God. But God said, I knew you. I knew you early on before you came to this earth. Now I've called you. Because I've called you, I will be with you. I will guide you. But you know, it's rather interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, Moses had problems with God when God called him. Moses said, you know, Bernova, I really can't speak. I can't talk. And God fixed that, didn't he? He said, oh, here's Aaron. can speak for you. Isn't it interesting that that kind of expression still exists today? Now, I know it doesn't exist here at Rehoboth, but indeed, sometimes when a pastor comes to us, we say, oh, I can't do that. You know, go to Sister so-and-so, they've got more time than I had. As if to say, maybe they had 36 hours in a day. Anybody here got 36-hour day? How often are we like that? To find a reason why we can pursue what God has called us to do. Well, the interesting thing also is the fact that Jeremiah is really perhaps the only one we know he had a secretary or an administrative assistant, Brother Pastor, who wrote for him, and you remember how it was, the first thing which he wrote was burn and destroy, and then to write it again. And the other interesting thing was the connection between the kings and understanding that God was a part of all of life. Isn't it amazing sometimes how we want to know the truth? We kind of slip in quietly. And it says that Jeremiah came to Zedekiah secretly. And Zedekiah realized why he was on the throne, that God had placed him there. And so he said, is there any word from the Lord? And what you have to keep in mind, if you know anything at all about that area, is that basically it's called the Fertile Crescent, and Israel was in between the kingdoms in the north and the kingdoms in the south, and so often they were like a ping pong ball being batted back and forth. And they were always trying to oblige those who were south, namely Egypt, and those who were north. And we've heard about the northern kingdom, and in particular we've heard about Damascus, and we've heard about it recently in terms of Syria. And all that's happening there, for that is where Damascus is. And so it was. Jeremiah said, you know, don't connect with the Egyptians. If anything, let the Babylonians come in and God will provide and take. But Zedekiah didn't really listen. He decided he would connect up with the Egyptians. Chaldeans feared the Babylonians, they left, and the Egyptians left, and he told them that he would lose his life if he didn't listen to what God was saying. Well, it isn't a joyous life being a prophet, but most times you don't want to say what God wants you to say. And it's not joyous simply because of the fact you know that many times you say what God wants you to say, it's going to get you in trouble. So many times you wrestle and struggle with it. And indeed, it got him in prison. Saved his life, but it got him in prison, and the things that he said would take place, they took place. But the significant thing was he raised the question, is there any word, and he told him what the word was. I think that in times like these, so often we want to know, is there any word from the Lord? The times in which we live, we want to know what indeed is the answer. What is God trying to say to us? And I want to suggest to you this morning that there is a word from the Lord. In this 21st century, in the year of 2012, there is a word from heaven. But you know, we've got to listen. We can't be like some of you husbands, you know, your wives say you listen, but it's selective listening. You choose what you want to hear. That you don't want to hear, you don't hear it, so you say. The word from God is very clear. It hasn't changed. Hear Israel, the Lord thy God is one God. And him only shall you serve. When shall we come to realize that God is God? It is God who made the heavens and the earth. God is creator. It is God who hung the stars in the silvery signs. It is God who scooped out the valleys and formed the mountains. It is God who set the flowing streams. Genesis says, in the beginning was God, and when he spoke, there was light. When are we going to realize that God is creator? God is sustainer. God is redeemer. When are we going to take seriously the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Moses and realize that God is God? I want to say to you this morning that God is not a cosmic bellhop. You can't call God when you want and tell God what you want God to do. You can petition, but God is not a cosmic bellhop to do what you want to do. God does what needs to be done in your life. Oh, we sing so often, but I don't think we listen to it, that God is an awesome God. Rules from heaven above, with wisdom, power, and love. Our God is an awesome God. Now, I know I'm not a meteorologist, but I want you to think about it. Part of it is the way in which we are treating things. Like when you don't rotate your crops to preserve the soil. Y'all didn't know I knew that, did you? When you take away the trees, you lose the land because there's nothing to hold. But I want to say to you, why are we having all of the significant weather changes? Yeah, you can talk about, you know, the wind coming down from the north and all of that and try to explain it. But what's really going on? Why are these things taking place? God is awesome. Sometimes we forget that, and we try to act like we're buddy-buddy with God. No, you're not buddy-buddy with God. That'll get you in trouble, thinking that. And you know, a lot of us really think that God goes off duty 12 o'clock tonight. God just operates on Sunday. Does that sound familiar? Like some of us who just operate on Sunday, Monday we're something else that you don't recognize from Sunday? God is not a God just on Sunday. God is 24/7, 365 days a year. God is God. And beside him, there is no other. Thank God that he is. Thank God he doesn't take a vacation. Thank God that he doesn't forget. Now, Brother Tim was trying to figure out how folk felt about 5:29 this evening, our time. And I know some of you were saying you wonder if God is concerned about the Patriots winning or the Giants winning. I want to say to you, I'm not sure that God is concerned about who wins. What I think God is concerned about is how the game is played. Whether you play it hard, but you play it fair. And by that I mean you don't come out and you tackle somebody, you know, and then you step on their arm. God is concerned about when there's a pileup, whether you're in there punching folk, because they can't see you. Now I know some of you said that used to happen in the olden days. That doesn't happen now. think what God is concerned about is how are the fans going to act in the stands? And are we going to have another situation like we had in terms of the baseball game in the West Coast, where a man struggled for his life? God is concerned about how we act and what we do. Is any word from the Lord? Yes, it is. To love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. The word is to love God. To love God and to love him only. And to realize that he is God. Now, the second word from the Lord is the fact that you heard this out of the New Testament. We're called to love each other as we love ourselves. Now, I know that's hard, you know, for a lot of us, and some of us don't love ourselves the way in which we should. But we're called to love, you know, one another. Now, what that means in part is, somebody likes cornbread, and you like greens, it doesn't mean you're going to get in a battle over it. It means you'll continue to eat cornbread, or they'll eat cornbread and you'll eat greens, and you'll still be able to get along and to talk to each other. Or if you're from Georgia, you can substitute grits. You know, to love each other doesn't mean that you like everything that somebody does. You don't like everything anybody does, even if it's family. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that you seek to do the best that you can by them. Now, two examples. Number one, the story of Joseph. Obviously, if you look at Joseph and his family situation, he probably had a right to be angry, upset, and to get back, but he didn't do that. But the scriptures remind us it's easy to love folk, you know, who are like us, to love family, to love friends. But the other story is the Good Samaritan. I want you to think about that. That man didn't know the person who was wounded. Samaritan, the person who was wounded, knew nothing about him at all. Didn't know where he came from, where he was born, what his pedigree was, what he knew, he was wounded. What he knew was he was created in God's image. What he knew, he was called to make him better. And he took him to the Jericho Renaissance Hotel. Said, I'll pay the bill. And you know I come here a lot. If what I leave is not enough, I'll give more. That's hard for us. It's hard for us to love folk whom we don't know. It's hard for us sometimes to love folk with whom we haven't grown up with. That's what God calls us to do. Well, the end of that story of the Good Samaritan is what? Go thou and do what? Likewise. That's not dated. That comes down the corridors of time to this present day. We're called to do the best we can. And I know sometimes it's hard. Sometimes we don't really ask folk how you doing or how you feel. And we don't ask that because we don't really want to know. And all it is kind of polite expression on our part. And sometimes you're conscious of that because if you know you got just a little bit of Christ in you, you're going to have to do something about it. And there are times when we don't want to do the right thing. It isn't that we don't know. Yeah, we know. But we don't want to do it. It's not lack of knowledge. But God has called us. Love others as we love ourselves. Doesn't mean you like everything that they do. Doesn't mean you're going to support everything that they do. But you're not going to do them any harm. Well, is any word from the Lord? Love God, love your neighbor. And then, you know, finally, God has called us. God has called us to be of service, to make the world a better place in which to live. Not just for me and my house, but for everybody. I don't know if you know where Schrader Lane Church of Christ is in Nashville, but it's going into the entrance of Tennessee State University. One of the things I discovered when I came back was the fact that they had built an assisted living building. And when I served Gordon for a little while, we had some folk who lived in that building. And what Dr. Jones was trying to do was to make life better in that community. We're called to serve. And so often we tend to forget that. No, most of you are not going to be an ambassador to the UN, right? Most of you are not going to be, well, I don't know about that, but a lot of you won't be running for an office. But you have to make life better where you find yourself. I want to say, I don't care what political party you belong to. It doesn't really matter. But what I want to say is, our task is not to assassinate people's character. Our task is not to say ugly things about folk. Whenever it came time to elect delegates to General Conference, Mike, people would say, well, I want to talk about, you know, you're being elected, et cetera. I said, well, that's fine. But don't you say ugly things about them to get me elected. Don't do that at all. Well, we're called to make it a better place. And really, what that means is to start where you are. To start where you are to make it better. To start where you are to have a sense of peace. To start where you are in terms of being sure we don't try to solve things through violence. To start where you are in terms of doing the things in the community that would enable people to live with the basic necessities to have them in life. A part of the reason we are where we are is the fact that what we did was we basically persuaded people to buy things they didn't need. And then we worked it out to our advantage. When somebody says it was a good deal, you better watch what they mean by that. Part of it is we're in the trouble that we are is because of the fact we didn't tell the truth. We took advantage of people who didn't know. And you say, is this biblical? Yes, Amos. That justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. And Amos is very clear about abusing people, especially those who are poor. The word is, treat folk right. Whatever it is you do to make it a better place. Well, in Chronicles, I think that's very correct when it says, those people who are called by my name will turn from their sinful ways, pray, and seek my face. I will heal the land. I don't think God's word has changed. We do these things, not only will he heal our land, but he will heal the world. Well, I want to say, a charge to keep we have, a God to glorify, a never-dying soul to save that fitted for the sky, to serve this present age, our calling to fulfill. Oh, may it all our powers engage to do our Master's will. Is there any word? Yes. Love God. Love each other. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Don't do like we usually sometimes say with that. Do them before they do you. That's his word for today. In part. Oh, how he loves you and me. He gave his life. What more could he give? Oh, how he loves you. Oh, how he loves you. Oh, how he loves you and me. There is a name I love to hear, love to sing its worth. It sounds like music in mine ears, the sweetest name on earth. Oh, how I love Jesus. Oh, how I love Jesus. Oh, how I love Jesus, because he first loved me. It tells me of a Savior's love who died to set me free. It tells me of his precious blood, save a sinner like me. Oh,